You're listening to Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Disco, that much maligned music of the 70s, was often portrayed as a passing fad, but in fact, it never really left us. Through March 18th, you can put on your tight polyester pants and those boogie shoes and do the hustle on up to the Longwood Arts Project in the Bronx for a new art exhibition that commemorates the disco era. It's called Do You Think I'm Disco? Joining us to talk about it is Edwin Remorin, the director of the gallery and the exhibition's organizer, and also with us is Mel Cherin, the financial backer of the club Paradise Garage and founder of the dance label West End Records, and some of his paintings are also featured in the exhibition. Gentlemen, welcome to the two of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Edwin, let me start with you. Simple question, why disco?
Disco for many reasons, and especially its impact in the United States coming out of the liberation movements, you know, post-60s. I was very much interested in looking at the...
Do you mean gay liberation?
Both gay sexual liberation, women's liberation, anti-war, and it, as were, of course, civil rights movement as well, and all into that. So it's very much looking at that relationship.
Okay, now you subtitle the exhibition, Where Dance Music Meets Cultural Politics. Now, we know that in its infancy, it came out of, you know, the gay scene here in New York City. What were the larger cultural implications?
I think it's hard to just limit it to just the gay scene, and I think that's one of the things that Mel and I have spoken about. It was very much coming out of the African-American community, the Latino communities, communities of color, women, and it's very much the intersection of all those communities. It's not just the gay community.
Mm-hmm. So who are some of the artists? Are they from the 70s, or are there some contemporary ones too?
We looked at it as a survey, and yes, there are some works from the 1970s, some works by Ronald Bruce Monroe, who actually made work inspired by some of the discotheques in New York City, from Paradise Garage to The Loft, to works that were just produced a couple weeks ago in painting and other media.
Okay, so we're still hearing the echoes of disco.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, people associate that era with kind of, you know, this glitz and glitter and stuff. What do these works look like? Do they have that kind of visual component to them?
Definitely. There is, if you look at the qualities of disco, and one of the things that we always talk about, I love talking about this with Mel, and I can't wait to hear what he has to say, is looking at the misnomer of disco. And there is that sort of sense of disco as having... Those qualities that are very, visibly attractive. At the same time, what we're really interested in looking at with this exhibition and with the title of itself, "Do You Think I'm Disco?" is to look at to question that. What is behind that? What was behind all the glitz and glamour?
All right. Now it's not just visual art. There are soundtracks, and there's one particular piece by Randasha. I'm gonna say this wrong, probably. Bikcim?
Bikcim, yeah.
Bikcim.
Randasha Bikcim, who also goes by Designer Imposter.
Okay. All right. Her vanity piece, I mean, literally, it is a vanity, a piece of furniture,
that's
right?
That's correct.
But it has this music that goes with it.
Exactly.
So now, as we hear it, tell us what we're looking at.
We're actually, the vanity piece is an installation, and I like to call it a mixed media installation where you can actually sit down. It's actually called Get Ready. And she just produced it a couple weeks ago. It's a whole wall installation. It looks like a small corner of someone's room, maybe her room, maybe a friend's room. She's worked a lot of artists in a lot of different media, and you get that real sense of it. It's a real living collage of that. And you can listen to the soundtrack, which she put together, which is basically a mixed CD or mixtape, as you will.
All right. It's in the show called Do You Think I'm Disco?, which is at the Longwood Art Gallery at Hostos Community College in the Bronx. My guests are Mel Cherin, the financial backer of the old club Paradise Garage and founder of the dance label West End Records, and Edwin Remorin, the director of the director and curator of the Longwood Arts Project in the Bronx. We're talking about their arts exhibition, Do You Think I'm Disco?, which includes this piece by Rondasha Bixim, a visual art piece with its own soundtrack. Now, Mel, your website calls you the godfather of disco. How does one get to be the godfather of disco?
I didn't come up with that title. I'm a little embarrassed because I said I never put out a disco record. My music was always danceable R&B.
Mm.
And they call it disco because it was played in the discos.
Well, and but, the R&B world mourns the passing of Wilson Pickett today.
Yes, another legend that I wish that people would realize that the history of hip-hop, the roots of hip-hop is R&B. And it's a shame that a lot of the hip-hop kids are not able to learn about their history.
And yet somehow they manage to find them, don't they?
Well,
because they're being sampled constantly.
God bless them, because I love the fact that they sample as long as they pay for the rights. You know, and one of my records, Heartbeat, has been the most sampled record of all time.
Really?
65 times that we know of.
Yeah,
DMX and, Notorious Big Life After Death did Another Man, a Barbara Mason song. So, because these kids grew up on that stuff, so naturally they kind of, emulate that.
Right. So you do an R&B being sampled by the hip-hoppers. So again, how do you get to, who came up with Godfather of Disco?
Stephanie Shepherd at Dance Music Report years ago put that tag on.
Why?
Well, because I was one of the early executives at a record company. At the time, it was Scepter Records, and I really kind of started the dance, the disco department there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it came about.
All right. Now, Mel, you are also one of the artists in this exhibition that Edwin has curated. And we have on our website, on the soundcheck page at WNYC.org, a number of links, including the cover art to an album by the jazz organist Shirley Scott, which is pretty indicative of your work. You did a lot of jazz album covers, kind of, abstract, very colorful. In what way, if at all, was your art influenced by disco?
Well, when those paintings came, were on
those
album covers, it was long before disco.
Yeah.
I happened to be working for ABC Paramount Records at the time, which one of their subsidiaries was Impulse Records. Bob Thiel, who was the producer and the A&R man, and very famous, I showed Bob some of my paintings. I had just started painting, and in fact, Archie Shepp Fire Music, he entitled it the album Fire Music because of the painting. So I would loan them the painting. I would get maybe $100 for it. I'd get the paintings back, and then when I would exhibit in the Village Art Show, I would put up the copy of the album cover, and people went, wild with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that came to me was I saw an album on CTI Records, Cree Taylor's label, and it had this artist, Olga Abisu, and it was just a very abstract painting. And that's where I got the idea, and jazz and abstract art work so beautifully together.
Right.
Five of them were nominated for Grammy Awards.
But now, how did when you move into the disco era in the 1970s, very different music, does the art have to change with it?
Well, I think that's where the fluorescent paint came in, that kind of hit with me. Because the last 5 years, paintings, I use oil and fluorescent paint on canvas. So if you look at it, the painting in a regular light, you see one painting, and when you turn on the black light, it turns into something completely different.
All right. Mel Charon is one of the artists being exhibited at Do You Think I'm Disco?, subtitled Where Dance Music Meets Cultural Politics. And also with us, Edwin Remoran, the director and curator. You got a big old disco ball to lower into the exhibition space?
We have a few disco balls. In fact, one new version called Disco Bundle by Shanique Ami Smith, and it's made out of textiles and even a platform shoe. So there's definitely the idea of innovation. And actually, one of the things I wanted to note about Mel's paintings, and he's talked about the innovation that he, or the new materials that he started using during the disco period, if you will. But interestingly, I think the relationship with jazz and disco is there's such a clear relationship. I mean, there is a real history there. And I think that's one of the things we need to look back at, is what makes those connections between the innovation of jazz and innovation within electronic and technology during that period.
Well, I mean, there were a couple of sort of crossover jazz disco projects in the 70s, which the jazz world was very quick to distance itself from. So how you say there was a clear, you know, connection there. How clear to you? I mean, give us an example.
I think, well, Mel actually brought it up, the idea of hip-hop owing a lot to R&B. And
right.
I think it does owe a lot to disco, and disco is coming out of R&B. If you were to look at the sense of improvisation in hip-hop, there is a clear sense of, you know, the sampling as well is very much related to that. And I think that's where it comes in.
Mm.
It's really that sense of we could use this material and do a lot. And the 12-inch single came out of that period as well.
Right.
And you got these extended play, you know.
So you're saying, are you saying that it's all drawing from a common well of kind of African-American music?
That's definitely
experience?
One of the main influences, I would say.
Okay.
But the title itself is actually a subversion or an appropriation of a title of Rod Stewart.
Yeah.
But it was a song that was done by another DJ, Steve Dahl, who works in Chicago, who did his rendition of Do You Think I'm Sexy as Do You Think I'm Disco, and made fun of the whole period in 1979.
Well, now, one of the other artists in the exhibition, Do You Think I'm Disco, is the Australian post-punk band called...
That's right. Three clicks of the tongue.
What is this thing called disco? Now, this gets into the whole cultural politics, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
How so?
Absolutely. Philip Brophy, who actually was one of the main composers with some other artists, collectively worked together on a project called... And it was also called Asphyxiation. What is this thing called? Disco. And they had he had written an article in 1980 that really pretty much looks at that sort of the relationship between what is disco as a music form, and what is this name called disco, meaning what is behind the use of it in terms of a commercial, you know,
right.
Its commercialization. So, but he looked at the various categories, and we could talk about the categories over and over. We could talk about funk, and you know, there's definitely funk in the exhibition as well. We could talk about R&B, and we could talk about rock. But if you listen to the track, and actually you could hear in the background, it's called The Crush, and it's sort of there.
You like doing that, don't you?
I was practicing it this morning. But it really looks at the sense of... they were really, very much looking at how a lot of work that was coming out of the 80s, and I grew up in the 80s, and that's one of my points of entry for this. I grew up in the 80s listening to both post-punk as well as Latin freestyle, for instance. But I was looking at the relationship. What was the cool distance in the post-punk, and what were they looking at? And they were very much influenced by black music, and that's where it came from. It was the appropriation of black music that was going on. And you see that also with the electro, and actually this sounds like an electro track from today, right?
Yeah, it does.
That's from 1980.
From the Australian band called... Australian band called, that's spelled T-S-K, T-S-K, T-S-K. What is this thing called disco? Is about the appropriation of black culture by white Americans in the 70s. This is a recording from the very early 80s. We're speaking with Edwin Remoran, the director of the exhibition that is called Do You Think I'm Disco? And with Mel Cherin from the dance label West End Records, which an oft-sampled label, Mel. I guess Edwin was talking a little bit about how he got into disco growing up in the 80s and sort of looking at where is the distance between what I'm listening to now and what came before. What about your own kind of connection to disco? Did it begin with West End Records?
No. After I worked at ABC Paramount, I went to SEPTA Records. And at the time, that was early 70s. And even though I was only doing production work, I used to go to the clubs, and I heard and talked with the DJs, and I knew that all they had was a 45 record. And so, like, I brought back ideas to the West End, the SEPTA office, and we had this one song called We're on the Right Track that you played earlier. Mm-hmm. I have to backtrack. There was SEPTA put out a record called This is a House Where Love Died by First Choice, and nothing really happened much with the record. So the producers, Norman Harris, brought in a second record, and the people, A&R people at SEPTA said, "Nah, this is, you know, sounds like, you know, old Supremes." So they turned it down, and that song happened to be Armed and Extremely Dangerous, which became a very big record. So the Norman Harris sold it to Bell Records at the time, and they decided to put out an album because Armed and Extremely Dangerous was so popular. Mm-hmm. But they wanted the song that we had, This is the House Where Love Died. So they made a deal with Florence Greenberg, who was the owner of SEPTA. Said, give us This is the House Where Love Died, and we'll give you a record, one song. So they traded. And I realized that We're on the Right Track was a great record, but we couldn't put it out because we only have one song.
So was it, I mean, for you, was it a business thing, or did you like the music?
Oh, no, I was into the music. I was into the, you know, one word, passion. If you don't have passion for something, you know, but I was into the music, and I was also into the business. Mm-hmm. So I came back, and I said, hey, listen, let's put the instrumental mix on the B-side of We're on the Right Track. And they said, oh, no, people think we're cheating them. And I begged them and begged, finally got them to do it. And that year, SEPTA got the Trendsetter Award from Billboard for being the first company to put an instrumental mix on the B-side. And it became industry, you know.
It became the standard.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
You'd have the big hit on the A-side and the instrumental version.
Before that, they used to have to record a second song, which was 99% of the time was a throwaway.
Right.
Yeah.
And, of course, those instrumental B-sides have become real favorites of a lot of the DJs
right.
in the years
well,
since.
Well, it was that way they could extend, you know, their mixing.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Edwin Remoran, who is the director and curator of the Longwood Arts Project. They're behind this exhibition called Do You Think I'm Disco at the Longwood Arts Gallery at Hostos Community College in the Bronx, and with the artist and CEO of West End Records, Mel Charon. Mel, in addition to being an artist and being, you know, in the record business, you are... I guess by your own admission, a charity junkie. I mean, you
not-for-profit junkie.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing an awful lot and have been for a long time to fight AIDS, raise AIDS awareness, but to also, you know, do a lot for the gay community. Tell us a little bit about how you got into that.
Well, I lost about close to 300 friends. Each one of them touched my life somehow. It wasn't just names that I heard and read in the paper. So, you know, and the fact that I am still here, healthy, you know, I can't do enough to say thank you, you know, and it's a way of honoring the people that have passed on. So my building that I have, that was the original home of the Gay Men's Health Crisis. We, back in the 82 to 84, that's where it was housed. Before it was called AIDS, it was called GRID, Gay Related Immune Deficiency.
Yeah.
So from that, and now I have a bed and breakfast and the West End Records, and I have a foundation called 24 Hours for Life. And 24 Hours for Life became the fiscal sponsor for Lifebeat, which is a music industry AIDS organization, which I'm very proud of and still on the board.
Right. Now, Edwin pointed out before that while disco may have started in the gay community, it went very quickly well beyond that.
It wasn't only. It was the black and the gay community
right.
that really, the underground community that really made it, you
right.
know,
it was a very specific kind of community. But it became this international phenomenon. Still, did the AIDS crisis have some impact on the way that disco kind of fell off the musical map in the 80s?
It didn't fall off the map. It's just that when we're talking about Steve Dahl, that's the guy that burnt those records in Comiskey Park.
Your disco records into a riot, and the White Sox forfeited the second
games.
Game. Both games?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the thing is that, you know, I heard Gloria Gaynor, someone asked her, why do you think that happened? Oh, well, people were tired of the sexual promiscuity, et cetera. That wasn't it at all. It was plain jealousy. No one was paying attention to the heavy metal and, you know, all other kind of genres of music. It was disco, it was all the way. Mm. So that was, and the music industry bit, you know, as soon as that happened, you couldn't mention the word disco anymore, even though it, you know, like disco remained alive and, you know, people kept thinking that it was dead.
Mm. All right, so you're saying it morphed into something else, or at least
they call it dance. You had to use the word dance instead of disco.
I think the revenge came in house music, if you will, at New York and Chicago became the birthplaces of house, and Chicago,
kind of motoric dance oriented style,
absolutely,
just like disco. Edwin, do you think there's a little revisionist history going on around disco nowadays? I mean, we've seen, you know, the New York Public Library last year did a great big thing.
That had a huge influence on me.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know if it's necessarily revisionist. I think it's uncovering. There is a sense of, you know, I'm sure enough when we're talking about the disco demolition, but I think it's really important to look at how it definitely permeates through a lot of different parts of our lives today. Mm-hmm. It's not just a music genre. It's a lot of more things.
Which is why the exhibition is more than just music.
Absolutely.
It's Do You Think I'm Disco? Subtitled Where Dance Music Meets Cultural Politics, directed and curated by Edwin Ramoran. And featuring artwork by, among others, Mel Cherin, who is also the CEO of West End Records, the dance label responsible for the band Blaze, whom you're hearing in the background. The exhibit is at the Hostos Community College in the Bronx. There is a link on our website at WNYC.org. Edwin Ramoran, Mel Cherin, thanks to both of you for joining us today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Soundcheck.
Do you remember House?
Coming up in a moment, a visit with Niaz, a band that merges modern electronica with traditional sounds of the Middle East. And if you'd like to email us, we'd like to hear from you. Soundcheck@WNYC.org.